What you're about to hear was aired on Planet Philadelphia, environmental radio show on Germantown Community Radio, 92.9 FM, WGGTLP in Philadelphia, and on gtownradio.com. We're going to be talking about something that really deserves some notice, and that's the increasing criminalization of environmental activism. And today I will be speaking with Carla Garcia Zendejas. She's with an organization called the Center for International Environmental Law. Thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you. Thank you for having this conversation about a very important piece of work or passion at CL for short, which will be easier.
Before we get into the actual topic, could you just say a few words about yourself?
Of course. I am an environmental and human rights attorney from Mexico originally. I'm from the northern part, Tijuana, the border with San Diego. I did a lot of my work there first on border issues, regional issues, environmental access to information laws, participation, et cetera, there. And then some support of communities who were battling, including my own community, against some ill-advised energy projects years ago. Joined the Center for International Environmental Law, CL, in a similar type of work, supporting communities impacted by development projects who, in many cases, don't even necessarily aren't opposed, but want to have a say in where, how these projects are designed.
So the reason I got in touch was I saw something from the UN. They issued a new report saying there's increasing criminalization of environmental activism in Europe. And in reading the article, people talked about this happening across the globe, including here in the U.S. So if we could key off the UN report.
Of course. The report was written by Michael Forst. He was what we call a UN special rapporteur for environmental defenders. So there's many types. There are rapporteurs that focus on climate, rapporteurs that work on livelihood, you know, and they're a gateway to at least presenting problems in our countries where, you know, our countries aren't necessarily doing what they should. So the UN tries to put out statements and get states, whole countries, to do something. And so he's quite knowledgeable and put out this report about how the criminalization of protests specifically, how just the activism is much more blatant in Europe. So he speaks to how systematic the unfortunate, and not even reprisals or harassment of defenders, but how it's three, fourfold, you know, how the rhetoric or the discourse against these defenders as terrorists, as, you know, troublemakers, is then reported on and then gets, you know, multiplied. And so then that leads to court hearings, et cetera, where they're tried as terrorists. They're held without any charges. All of this very blatant actions by police, by courts, by states against peaceful activists. And there's a big emphasis on the fact that these are peaceful activists. And sometimes, you know, we see a protest in the street, we see that someone got hit or someone may have thrown something, but makes the distinction, and this is a recognized principle and standard. Maybe if one person of this peaceful protest does something, that doesn't disqualify the protest as a peaceful protest, you know? The action of one person does not disqualify the hundreds of people that remained sitting on the ground, for example, or who were not even making noise. And so these type of protests have existed for decades, but now the crisis in the planet, you know, we're experimenting this, what they call the triple crisis of pollution, of health, of a climate crisis that is affecting our lives, affecting people because of tremendous storms, because of drought, because of lack of food, many, many other factors. And so the activism of what are called defenders, anyone trying to protect their right to a healthy environment, is now even more desperate.
Could you give people some examples of what you're talking about?
Of course. So the People, Land, and Resources program, which I lead at CL, continues to support a community in Nicaragua that had been wanting to protect their land and their water from a mining project. This was a gold mining project. And there had been criminal charges brought against them, and they had to protect themselves in court because of their protests. And I want to make this note. When you file criminal charges against someone, what you're trying to do with where you're using the laws to criminalize someone for their actions, the whole point is to stop someone, right? Let's just stop the activists. Let's make it difficult for them to do their work. Let's just take them out of the equation. So these people have to now use resources, find a lawyer, get out of jail, et cetera, right? They may or may not have the funds to do these things, but that's one first stop, right? And so that sometimes takes years to get out of. But then the community may have also been filing, you know, after protests, gone through legal channels to try to access information, to try to participate in where the mine is going to be. Can you be sure that the aquifer isn't affected, the river, et cetera, and kept struggling. And so even after litigation, even after an accountability process that challenged the financing for this investment in mining in Nicaragua, what the state of Nicaragua did was to use laws to eliminate the legal license of the nonprofit organization that was supporting this community in Nicaragua. So it used fiscal regulations, it used tax regulations, it used a very systematic way of just saying this NGO is illegal and therefore it cannot exist anymore. And they did that with many organizations in Nicaragua. So now the organization itself, the infrastructure that was supporting the community, is gone. And so whatever protest you were having now is illegal, because now it's very clear that you're opposing this mine and you're affecting commercial values and you're treading on land that isn't yours. And that led to people being arrested again, people being in communities where trucks with police in full riot gear came into a community just to harass them, just to be there, just to send a message to say, cease and desist your opposition to this mine, where a truck with fully armed men, you know, was outside of one of these environmental defenders' house for years at a time, where on days before Christmas, they came into his house, pushed him around, pushed his family around, and then took him and his computer and arrested him and charged him with crimes against the mining company.
This was all peaceful protest. There was no violence committed by the protesters.
No, they weren't destroying property. They weren't, moving anything. There wasn't even a mine there yet. You know, this was before they were trying to be able to intervene in what this was going to look like. But yet the priority for the state was the business enterprise, which happens in many cases.
I've been following environmental and justice issues for decades. I remember back in the 80s, here in the US, people were labeled eco-terrorists. And the FBI surveilled and did various things to people who were trying to get their voices heard. And recently, there's a thing called Cop City in Atlanta, Georgia, where people have been prosecuted. And the FBI had agents surveilling at the Dakota Access Pipeline protests. Mm-hmm. And so Maybe I'm wrong, but it just doesn't seem to me there's a high level of discussion about what's going on, except in certain communities who are affected directly.
I agree. And I will tell you, there's even an office. There's an office in the State Department of the U.S. that is tasked with environmental defenders, that is tasked with being available and responding when there are issues of reprisals. So it's not that the U.S. government doesn't know that environmental activists and environmental defenders are acting in good faith in other countries or even here. But I think it's the way that it has been presented, the words that we use in the United States are quite different. You know, we don't hear human rights as much in the United States. The rest of the world is very clear. These are human rights violations, right? These are broken laws. These are environmental rights violations. These are human rights violations. But it's that that different language, I think, has kept the U.S. from being as blatant, as truthful of what's happening in the United States. And I think that's a dangerous thing, because here we have civil rights, right? We have civil rights, but in the rest of the world, it's very clear that the reason why communities and activists are outside is because something hasn't happened. You know, they either haven't been listened to, they want to be listened to. And this is the genesis of many laws and treaties in the rest of the world, many of which the U.S. hasn't signed on to, which are basically what we call access rights. We want access. You know, it's not that I'm just being annoying that I want this information or transparency from you. I want the information to be informed, to be able to learn and have a discourse with you about what the mine would have looked like. And if you don't listen to me and if you don't hear me, then I should be able to access justice, by the way. If this doesn't work, if you didn't give me the information, if you didn't allow me to participate, then I should be able to access justice. And new protections around the world are even recognizing that that person who wanted a say, that environmental defender, even that person should be protected, because this is a part of what we call environmental democracy. In a democracy, you should be able to say something and be safe to say it. So we're very good at that part in the United States. You know, freedom of speech, right? Freedom of speech, freedom of assembly. But when it comes to environmental matters, no. No. That's something else, you know, because that has to do with a pipeline. And that has to do with me extracting something from the ground. And that has to do with the environment. And that is a very serious tension that is recognized around the world. Because, you know, everything is fine until it has to do with the status quo.
One of the things I've read is that the protesters are being labeled as anarchists. And some people have said that this is a new way of justifying surveillance and database searches and the use of informants. And why don't we talk about how democracy is supposed to function and what's going on now?
Exactly. And on the surveillance piece, the activists want to be heard. This is a ridiculous thing. They want to be able to sit down, have a conversation and tell you, this is what I think is wrong and how we should fix it, or how you should fix it, government, how you should fix it, state or municipality or what have you. But, you know, we don't do that for the most part in governments. We think that we're doing everything right and we don't need the voices that are outside of government buildings. But then companies have done this to our partners in Chile, hire people to surveil these activists, to tap their phones, to get information about where they're meeting, what they're saying, when they're saying it, get information about their children, really, to get information about every family member they know, so they know everything, every conversation, every movement of these defenders, to find out what, you know, what they're saying. They're not even hiding it. They've been saying it or trying to say it to the press. They've been submitting documents left and right. They've been putting signs up in front of these companies with a message that says the water should be for the communities. You know, we want to protect the water for Chileans in Santiago. It's not rocket science, but yet we use these cyber surveillance or phone surveillance, and then we defame these activists if they're opposed. That is the opposite of a democracy. Because if you actually had a conversation, if you allowed the exchange of information between people who may be opposed to something, you will hear their point of view. These are people who have lived in the region for decades who could tell you, you know what, the hydroelectric project that you want to put into Chile, you need to assess the water properly because we're already suffering from climate change. I don't think the water that you're going to need for this hydro project is going to be enough. This is not going to work, and you should rethink this. But they were ignored, and lo and behold, 20 years later, this project doesn't have enough water and isn't functioning properly. And now the river isn't reaching the ocean, which is an environmental and an ecological catastrophe, right? So we are going about it in an upside down way, because we think that these people are opposed, but we all want the same thing. We all want to live, you know, we all want to have water. We want to have a job. We want to have healthy kids. We want to have this planet to still exist. If you don't involve, if you don't include, if you don't listen to your citizens, then how can you be surprised when they're knocking on your door, when they're sitting outside of your building? How can you be surprised?
I would like to mention something that goes directly to that point here in Pennsylvania. There were climate activists trying to meet with our governor, Governor Shapiro, who, when people voted for him, was considered very up to date on environmental and justice concerns. So, according to the news reports, they tried to set up a meeting both in person and online with the governor. They either drew no response or were denied. Mm-hmm. So they went to the Capitol in Harrisburg, had a protest, and it was a peaceful protest. And then Pennsylvania state troopers arrested them for trespassing and various things. These sorts of things are happening
everywhere.
Everywhere, yeah. And then also here in Harrisburg, the Senate Judiciary Committee just advanced a couple of bills, and one of them would increase the fines and penalties for individuals who vandalize or trespass upon any part of critical infrastructure facility.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what they mean by that, but I do know in other cases, people have been arrested for simply setting foot on the property, holding up a sign.
Exactly. You know, and these are the measures, right? These are the measures. Ultimate goal is just stop. Stop protesting. Stop making noise. Don't come over here. Or raising fines, or, you know, which happened in Europe and was documented by, you know, Forced, right? You know, raise, you know, it's not even a sanction or a fine for the group. It's individual for each person. Even if you weren't the one who was sitting there, if you weren't the one who, you know, you're also going to be fined. You're also going to be detained. So the ultimate goal is to stop people and then characterize their actions and put another name on it, you know, so they're not peaceful protester anymore. They're delinquents. They're creating obstacles. They're, you know, creating barriers to transportation, what have you. But you're not doing the work, which I will admit, public participation and hearing people out is not easy. You know, it takes time. You need to build trust. You need to create a fora. You need to create the space. You need to invite everyone who may have an interest. This is not easy. But when you're not even willing to spend the time, then how are you a representative of anyone if you only want people's attention when you need them to vote for you? But after that, you're done. So who are your stakeholders when you became elected? Is it only the private sector? Because there were citizens that voted for you under a certain platform. But for you to continue to listen to these constituents, it takes an effort. It is not easy to engage, to sit down, to listen to somebody that you don't agree with. But if we don't do that, we're all going in the wrong direction and into a very risky and dangerous and polarized place, which we're already seeing.
We've talked about a lot of things, but is there something in particular that you want people to know?
Oh, yes. In 2022, Frontline Defenders, which is an organization that documents the killings of environmental defenders and has for many, many years, numbers which have increased, unfortunately, year after year. In 2022, there were 401 deaths that they investigated and documented throughout the world, with deaths, but also documented harassment, preventative detention, which I mentioned, you know, being held without any charges, surveillance, all of the things we've been talking about. And the region that still is the most dangerous to work on these issues, to be an environmental activist, is still Latin America, with Colombia being the most dangerous. But even in the midst of that, the concept of environmental defenders, the goal of environmental defenders as those who are bringing forth, and it may be women, children, you know, student activists, indigenous people, indigenous community, women, you know, all over, it runs the gambit. There is a recognition that there is a role they play in improving the ways we live. And as I mentioned, the State Department of the United States also recognizes that. I don't know how much they engage in protecting environmental defenders in the U.S., or if environmental activists in the U.S. even know that this office exists. But I can tell you that in emergency situations where partners from around the world, from Africa, from Latin America, are in dire straits, we have been able to contact U.S. embassies and say, we fear for the life of this partner, of this woman, of this man. They don't tell us exactly what procedure they have. But just knowing that they are aware and having that additional eye from the U.S. government in XYZ country has made a difference to activists. It's one thing if all these environmental groups are aware and we connect with each other and we're tweeting or we're saying such and such is at risk in, you know, Europe or Eastern Europe, or we need to do something and somebody calls somebody. It's one thing. But if the U.S. government is making a phone call, that has bearing. And I don't know how much, you know, we're aware that even, you know, that at a federal level, the United States is aware of the value of environmental defenders.
Possibly people here in the U.S. should be contacting the State Department?
I think so.
What is the name of this department, in case people wish to look it up?
Of course. So it's the Bureau of Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor at the State Department. And they have issued many statements, guidelines about what a human rights defender is, strategies for protecting and supporting human rights defenders, a tradition of respecting and protecting human rights both at home and abroad. So, I mean, these are statements that it's truly important to know about.
Are there other actions you suggest people might take?
This is the sad part, but in case of an emergency, in case of something, who are your people, you know, in case you don't come back home, you know, what is this chain of phone calls or emails that I would need to write, or who could we contact? These are important networks to have. There's Frontline Defenders, as I mentioned. There are many other organizations. Some work outside of the U.S., but some work here as well. Having a plan, you know, when you leave your house for that protest, sometimes defenders even leave their phones because then they're tracked via their phones. But, you know, do people know where you were? Does your family know? Does your significant other know? You know, who should we be contacting? What were you doing? because this is important information when you are not able to contact someone, you know, or have a phone number memorized. Now we don't know those phone numbers because they're on our phones, right? But who are these people that you would need to call if you're arrested, if, you know, you have that one phone call, and then start that network of people acting on your behalf? You know, Jane Fonda, when she was here in DC getting arrested many times, was saying sometimes putting our bodies out and risking our bodies to make a point is a tradition in the United States. This is something that has been done to get attention to something that is a life and death issue for you. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't have a support group, a support network that's going to help you when and if you do get arrested.
Was there anything else you'd like to say?
I would just say that it has been an honor and a privilege to be standing, you know, shoulder to shoulder with some tremendously passionate people. This is not easy to do. I'm, for the most part, at my desk, and I support communities from around the world from my desk. But the moments when you get to stand with them and just see their resilience and their passion and their commitment to these causes is the energy that I get to continue the work, which is sometimes difficult. It's devastating work sometimes when you hear that partners are under threat or have been harassed or are in jail. But their resilience and their strength is something that drives us and keeps us moving forward.
Well, thank you so much for talking with me today.
No, you're welcome. Thank you so much.
If you want to know more about Planet Philadelphia, go to planetphiladelphia.com. You could also find out more about other G-Town Radio programming by going to gtownradio.com. I hope you will consider making a small monthly donation to help Planet Philadelphia continue presenting interviews on important underreported environmental topics and exploring their complexities and intersections. Thank you so much for your support.